Thanks very much.
Like it.
Boy, don't I know it. They're rocking the Casbah, Wendy. Earlier in the show, we were talking about what went on in the Senate last night with Chris Murphy. That's the Democratic senator from Connecticut, as he went on a 15-hour filibuster, and both you and me said essentially the same thing. You and I said the same thing. The two of us said the same thing. We said the same thing. We remembered hearing a little bit about filibusters when we were in history class in grade school, but didn't know all the particulars of what a filibuster was comprised of. Paul Green joins us right now, Arthur Rubloff Professor of Policy Studies and Director of the Institute for Politics over at Roosevelt University and a frequent contributor to this very radio station. Paul, thank you very much for being here. How are you? Everything good?
All right. Good to be with you guys.
Thank you.
All right. I did not remember what a filibuster was, and I felt kind of foolish, and it was great to find out. Bill didn't know, and even Steve Bertrand was a little unsure.
Oh, that's shocking. I'm shocked.
That one shocked me, too.
That was shocking.
But now, what exactly is a filibuster, first of all?
Well, the political science 101 definition of it is rather simple. In the U.S. Senate, any senator can get up, or a group of senators can get up. Murphy, this fellow had help from other senators, including our own Dick Durbin. They could, as long as they get the floor, they could speak as long as they want on any topic they want, and the only way you could end it is if 60 senators or three-fifths of the Senate, often you don't have 100 there, but they got to be three-fifths of those people there, vote cloture, which means closed debate. And it's very difficult to do that because, especially in a Senate that's divided somewhat evenly. And so all that is that, you know, you can't do it often because then it becomes rather repetitive. But there have been somewhat historical filibusters. Strom Thurmond once went almost 24 hours. Former Senator Morse from Oregon went like over 20 hours. By the way, those guys did it by themselves. But it's a technique. You usually tick off a lot of people when you do it, especially on the other side. But that's all it is. The House of Representatives does not have a filibuster rule, but the Senate simply says as long as you have the floor, you can talk on any topic you want for as long as you want. And the only way they can stop you is by having three-fifths of the senators vote cloture or vote to end debate.
So, Paul, if if Murphy's going on and then he wants to yield to Durbin, he doesn't yield control of the floor. He yields some of his own time to Durbin, how is it that he maintains control?
I'm not sure, but I think it's sort of like passing a baton. The reality is that everyone knew what was happening. And so, you know, he gave it to Durbin. Normally you have one person. Ted Cruz very recently did his own, I think, 10 or 12-hour filibuster.
But I know this sounds like I'm kidding, but I'm not kidding. He was reading Dr. Seuss books during that.
Yes, he was. That was one of his...
I thought you were kidding about this earlier. What was that? What was the point of that?
I know on radio you really shouldn't say this, but sometimes you really got to fill air.
Yeah.
And he had a.
That's what he was doing.
Yeah, he could read anything. He could read the dictionary.
All right. Well, this nonstop speech went 14 hours and 50 minutes, and it did work because now the GOP has agreed to allow these gun control votes.
Well, yes, but it's really more complicated than that. The Republicans are saying they would have had votes. This is an amendment to the appropriations bill, and many Republicans have their own amendments. So they were going to call the bill, allegedly. Who knows? So now they're saying all the Democrats were trying to do was win political points, which is like stating the obvious. But, yes, there is now a debate within the debate whether or not the Democrats were just grandstanding and that the Republicans were going to call the bill anyways because they have for different reasons.
And the issue at hand here on whether to ban people on the government's terrorist watch list from obtaining gun licenses.
Right.
And whether to expand background checks.
Background checks on the no-fly thing is really the big one because what the Democrats have done, they've tied gun control into terrorism. And that's, no, that's something that's very difficult to vote against. My guess is there will be a watered down version that will be compromised to get this through. That's my guess. You never know, because the process, the Senate is nothing but many rules on top of rules. And I would guess, and only a guess, that they're going to come to some compromise solution, which will probably not satisfy everybody. But the NRA is going all out to stop any kind of control. I mean, that's a fact.
Professor Paul Green on the line with us. Now, Bill, you had mentioned, is there a time limit? And I questioned whether or not you had to, in advance, say, we are going to be holding a filibuster.
Schedule it?
Can you just stand up and begin filibusting?
You could just stand up and do it, but I think there was a warning because Senate Majority Leader McConnell did nothing to, there was no screaming and no yelling. It was sort of, okay, do your thing. And that was it. I mean, the internal debate within the Senate with their rules and with their history is much too complicated to discuss, and I am not an expert on all the intricacies. All I can tell you is that given what had happened in Orlando, some form of that bill on gun control was going to be called. Now, whether it passes or not is a different issue.
Paul, the reason that we keep hearing that the NRA's lobby is so strong, probably the strongest lobby of anything, mm-hmm. is that they are funding various political candidates, so mm-hmm. then the political candidates do pretty much anything the NRA tells them. Is it just that simple, or is there more to it than that?
That's a good chunk of it. One of the favorite sayings, noisy squawks till money talks. You can use that one if you like.
I will use that. Thank you.
Okay. The reality is that they do fund, but it also is the political side. Since we have so few contested congressional races where you have now this year, because of perhaps Mr. Trump, there may be more contested House races, but the maps have been so, shall we say, set up so that many of these congressmen, the only way they can lose is in a primary, which gives the NRA, for Republicans, tremendous power, because they say you'll be a big shot with the independents and some Democrats may like you, but we're going to defeat you in the next primary because you're not a Republican enough. And, compromise has become a dirty word. To use the old political science 101 phrase, compromise used to be the mother's milk of politics. Today it's almost a death knell. So that has changed in America. So that's their power. It's the power in the primary, not necessarily in the general election.
I am very ignorant when it comes to politics, and I'm not ashamed to ask questions, but here's my question. In radio, you cannot do payola. You cannot accept things for free in order for airtime. In a weird way, this is kind of like payola. You are not going against them because you want their money. How is this legal?
It's legal because the second smartest people in government dealing with this issue are the lawyers and the Federal Elections Commission who make the rules. However, the smartest people in politics are the ones who are able, the lawyers who are able to get around it. And believe me, there are so many ways you get around this. I mean, you can set up a PAC, a super PAC now. It's one of the things Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton have been screaming about, where you have a pot of money that no one knows who's contributing to it, and somehow it gets directed at your political enemy. I mean, there are ways to get around it. I use this line with my father-in-law when he talked about catching fish. Only the dumb ones have been caught. That holds true here. Only the dumb ones have been caught. People who take money under the table or all that kind of old-fashioned stuff, that's silly, because you can do the same thing for your campaign legally. You don't have to, an envelope in a dark corner. You don't have to do that.
Seems like I would like to filibust and make the NRA not so powerful. It just feels like this is corrupt.
But anytime anyone does essentially what Wendy says, it dies a quick death. They're that strong, aren't they, Paul?
Yes, but there are other PACs that are pretty close to, lobbying groups. I mean, the Democrats have theirs too. And a part of that, you can see what's happening in our disaster in the state of Illinois, where you have real strong unions who are the major source of funding for Democrats, holding the line too. I mean, we could talk all we want about, money, and now that Sanders' campaign is over, this kind of nostalgia, Mr. Smith goes to Washington kind of thing. But without the dollars to run, you really are in big trouble, whether it's national, state, and even aldermanic races. I mean, that's where it is. And given, remember, it's Paul Green, not you guys.
Right.
Given the fact that the media plays along with this, No television or radio station is ever going to be upset about the amount of paid advertising on their station.
And that's true.
I said that. I don't want you guys to get...
No, don't worry.
No, I mean, there's some truth to that, but it seems like, you know, we're just going with how the system currently is. I don't know. To me, that is the changes that need to be made, not the gun control issues. We have to change the way these lobby groups are able to tell us what to do.
Go on, Paul. I'm sorry.
Now, real quick, there was a study a couple of years ago for congressional races and looking at which 435 districts, and some of them were uncontested, but which of the contested districts, who won, and the correlation between winner and the most money spent was over 90%. The more money you have, the greater your chance of winning.
Paul, getting back to something you said a little while ago about the media and accepting money from the various candidates, I believe the FCC mandates that if any political party wants to buy time on your station, you can't reject that. Isn't that correct?
Yes, and you can give the lowest amount of
airtime.
Yeah, no, what they pay is
the lowest rate.
Yeah, and, you know, I've had this conversation. I'm not telling stories out of school, but since Illinois has become a blue state, a lot of television stations especially have been hurt on political advertising.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the only time you see a presidential candidate coming in over Illinois is when they're flying to Iowa or Wisconsin. So you don't have any real in the general election. No, it's a tough issue. I mean, the stations must do it. I think there's some regulations here or there about what kind of political campaign advertising. But still, I mean, you would think that, let's put it like this. Paid media, a 30-second cartoon, absolutely clobbers intense debate on C-SPAN.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, people don't want to listen to that. They don't want to pay attention to that. So you give them 30 seconds and bang, you know, they got their thing. Or a clip on this or a clip on that. I think that's one of the secrets of Donald Trump's great success in the Republican race for the nomination is that he gave his sound bites were, you know, short, quick, snappy, and no one was confused at what he was saying.
Paul, here's a quick text, 708. Please ask Paul Green, are we to trust politicians who look to get around the law? That's part of politics, isn't it, Paul?
Well, I don't know if it's around the law, but you got to have the money. And I am a great defender of elected officials. I have worked with them for decades, and especially the more local you are, there are a lot of overwhelming number of people are just in it not for the money, but in it for help their community. But when you get up to with the big dogs, the Senate, the House, and you have races, I mean, our Senate race between Kirk and Duckworth this November. I would say that'll go north of 20 million.
Yeah.
I mean, so where do you get that money? And, you know, I think that's something that, how do you deal with it? You have First Amendment rights. You know, one of the things they talked about is, you know, changing with the Supreme Court ruling on Citizens United about calling corporations, they have a right to put as much money as they want into it. I mean, that's one of the things that Sanders and Clinton railed about is that the money in this thing is astronomical. And, you know, you can't play the game unless you have the dollars to play.
Of course. Paul, do me a favor. Let's pick that up in just a little bit because we have more questions for you. And if you have any questions or comments, Paul Green is our guest, the director over at the Institute for Politics at Roosevelt University. Give us a call or a text right now, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We're talking about the filibuster, the 15-hour filibuster that went on last night. Professor Paul Green on the line with us. And where were we, Bill?
Well, there's a couple of different questions. Actually, ask your question. You and I were discussing this off-air, and this is a great question.
All right, Paul Green, here's my question. In the past, it seems like whatever Donald Trump did, however shocking it was, his support was growing day by day. And now I am hearing rumblings that maybe he is losing some steam. I wanted your opinion on that.
Well, I wrote about this, so I'll just, pardon the expression, quote me. When you're running in a Republican primary, you're appealing to a certain segment of the voters. You're not appealing to the general voters. You're appealing to people within the Republican Party. And I wrote that the people listening to Donald Trump, they didn't care about the lyrics. They liked the music of what he was saying. So he could say any outlandish thing he wanted, but They liked the fact that he was saying it and how he said it and how he looked. You know, I'm chairman of the City Club of Chicago, and we had Mr. Trump at our almost a year ago at our meeting, and he was absolutely spectacular.
Charismatic, I mean, I've heard.
Absolutely right, and what you there is he. Except for the fact that now he occasionally reads a speech from a teleprompter, I saw his notes, and they were basically like Abraham Lincoln were on the back of an envelope, and they were not; they were just words. So this man has the ability, because of, I think, television or his own personal experience as a businessman, to be as quick as anybody I've ever seen. And again, nothing in depth, and sometimes he has a sentence with four predicates, but nevertheless, the people who are his fans and his supporters, they don't care that it doesn't necessarily follow in any kind of order. They just like the fact that he's saying it and sticking it to the people in both political parties that they think should be stuck.
Paul, in this election, the election that we're going through right now, this election cycle, we have Donald Trump, a businessman. We had Carly Fiorina, a CEO, former CEO. We had Ben Carson, a surgeon. One of them making it all the way to being the candidate for the Republicans. Mm-hmm. Is this the new normal? Is this what we'll see going forward in other elections? Is people who don't really have a political background making it this high?
I think in the Republican Party, for sure, that could be. Remember, anyone who had a record. I'm surprised Kasich, as a governor, lasted as long as he did. I mean, anytime these guys in that big debate, when they had all those debaters, look at my record, that was like a death sentence. I mean, because people don't want to hear about your record. So, yeah, there will be a pop-up candidate without, you know, it all depends how Trump does in the general. But, yeah, because people who are anti-government, who think that basically the governmental system we have is just, I can't think of a better word, just sucks. They're going to be looking for anybody who's outside. In the Democratic Party, I think they weathered the fight much better in that Sanders, who for the first time in his life was running as a Democrat, demanded the party that he never belonged to change their rules. That's not going to happen. So what you have in effect is that I think your past record as a Democrat will still count to something, at least your public record. But in the Republican Party, you may have all kinds of people trying to emulate what Trump did. But my opinion, there aren't many Trumps out there that could, you know, wheel it and wing it. That's the word I'm looking for, wing it like he did, when, in effect, people study and they have all this stuff going on and they read, you know, white papers. He never did any of that. And he clobbered his opponent. So I don't have any analogy. There has never been a candidate like Trump in my lifetime, and I covered 14 conventions for this station.
But how will that serve him now that it's down to two, now that it's just down to he and Hillary Clinton? When they're debating, how will that, I'm not going to study, I'm just going to talk off the top of my head tactic, work for him?
It's not. Though Mrs. Clinton has plenty of her own baggage when it comes to preparation for a debate, as witness her debates with Mr. Sanders, she's going to be totally prepared on foreign policy. It's not going to be close. And if he just wants to wing it and give, you know, adjective and adverb answers instead of nouns and verbs, he's going to have a lot of problem. Also, keep in mind that there's that libertarian candidate, Mr. Former Governor, I think Johnson from New Mexico, who, you know, the old notion may have some more staying power than people think. And for some of you more mature people, you may remember in 1992 when Bill Clinton beat George Bush, the first, one of the reasons he won was a guy named Ross Perot, who took 19% of the vote. So the Clintons may benefit again from a third-party candidate.
But he won't be allowed, the Libertarian candidate won't be at the debates, will he?
All depends. Now, there is a good question, and I don't know what the rules are, if it's 10% or 15% in five polls or whatever it is, but if he suddenly starts surging, yes, he'll be at the debate. I think there's a limit.
Miss H. Ross Perot. I really do. Where is he now?
I don't know where he is now. Paul, do you?
Oh, God. What the heck? I'm the man who on the radio station back then called him Gabby Hayes with a checkbook. I'm sorry. That was
Gabby Hayes with a checkbook.
Yeah, that
beautiful.
Was well. That was one of my lines. You know, I'm on with Spike. You got to come up with something. But yeah, I think he just simply burnt out. I mean, he was. I interviewed him, and I'll be honest.
Paul, remember this? We hosted a show. He started the show.
Sunday night.
WGN. Yeah. And
Ross Perot did?
Ross Perot had a syndicated show through WGN.
Was it called? Well, let me tell you something.
A guy named Chris Bly would fly down to Dallas every Sunday to help facilitate the show. Yeah, it was a double.
And that's during his run for presidency?
I think it was probably after his run.
Afterwards.
He's, but it's still, it was great listening, I'll tell you that.
He's still alive.
He's an interesting man.
85 years old.
He was.
He was mesmerizing, although he looked 85 then.
Well, remember, he left because people were going to mess with his daughter's wedding. That was his exit.
Oh, wow.
And then he came back in and still got 19% of the vote. You know, at the 92 Democratic Convention, when he kind of, you know, when that story broke, those Clinton people were really concerned about him. I mean, to be blunt about it. And then he just self-destructed. There was a conspiracy. They were, Steve, they were going to assassinate his daughter or something.
Well, that was it. They were going to disrupt her wedding, he said.
Paul, we appreciate your time. Paul Green, of course, from Roosevelt University.
My pleasure. But I promised the producer I would give you the, because filibuster was the original
question.
Thing.
Yeah.
The great Spike Odell, when asked about this, said, that guy, he used to be on Howdy Doody.
Beautiful.
Phineas T. Buster.
Phineas T. Bluster, I believe, right?
Bluster, yes.
I remember him, sure.
That was my legacy.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Paul Green from Roosevelt University. Let's take a quick break, and then Steve with the news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.